sunshine, little Uber, liver, liver, leap.
Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You're tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, here, of course, with our favorite gardener. It's Lance in the house. Good evening, Lance.
Oh, good evening, Jill.
And we have one of our friends, neighbor, fellow worm, Wynn Clearwater from Clearwater Design is joining us this evening. Good evening.
Fellow worm.
Fellow worm.
Thank you. I feel so included in the worm club.
Great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and always a lively discussion when Wynn is here, and we're going to be talking about some of the things you're doing with Clearwater Design. All kinds of stuff. But we're going to start with giving out the phone numbers because it's a live call-in show. 970-527-4868, 866-KVNF now. The email is worm@kvnf.org. And we're going to start with an email from our friend Amy here in Paonia, who has a bad back, and gardening can be hard on the back. Considering building entire garden with raised beds by using huge apple boxes. So what are the pros and cons? Can she fill them halfway with rocks and then create a false bottom with wood to shrink the depth of the box? How deep should it be? And then looking for soil recommendations and where to get some of that soil locally.
That's we could go the whole show on that question.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's get it started.
Well, my take on the fruit box is that they're plywood generally, and that tends to break down. So they're great because they're affordable generally. You can get them pretty cheap around here, if not for free. But I compost in mine sometimes. I use them as bins to hold my different types of compost that I then make piles from. Because I like to store my stuff so that I can make one pile at a time.
Right.
Instead of adding as you go.
Yeah.
But I think they're good. I think, are they like 3 foot high, 4 foot high? Do you know, Lance?
Well, I know they're 20 bushels.
It's all so, how you stretch that out.
2.5 to 3. You know, so if you want to make it higher, you can always stack them higher.
You could
go
blocks
higher. Underneath them.
Yep. And I probably wouldn't personally put rocks in the bottom too much because depending on what you're growing, but if you're going to grow carrots or any root crop, carrot roots can go feet into the ground.
Yeah.
So
fill those babies with soil.
Fill those babies with soil. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying don't use them, but be aware that there is glue in plywood.
Yeah.
So if you're okay with that.
Yeah. Well, you could put a little bit of gravel for drainage.
A little bit.
And put that fiberglass woven weed barrier. Mm-hmm. So you still got drainage.
Right. So you'd put the gravel first and then the weed barrier on top of the gravel to keep the soil from going in, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then on top of that soil.
Mm-hmm.
I use a mixture of different types of soil. For something like that, I'd go with a lighter mix myself.
Yeah.
Paonia Soil Company has a nice mix of what I use for my potting soil in my nursery. Is just coconut core and perlite. And then I add to that from Crawford, actually, Soil Not Dirt. They have a really fine quality organic compost.
Yeah, nice.
And it's made from organic stuff. They actually get organic stuff and make it. They have 3 different grades of compost. It's really top-notch stuff. But you want to mix that in light with the other stuff. And then I would probably add in some of your normal ground soil too.
Yeah.
Just to get your microbials going.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Sure.
Throw some worms in there.
Yeah.
We love worms.
Yeah.
What do you suggest?
Well, some sort of similar thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you're gonna have to add a little bit and just go for it.
Yeah.
Mix it up. There's a lot of great soil around here.
There really is.
And you know, and you can observe how things are growing.
Exactly.
And you might need a little compost tea, manure tea, some kelp mixed in there. You know, you'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you'll see how it goes, exactly.
All right.
Gardening is always trial and error.
And, you know, you might make it and water it heavily, and that will settle it.
Yeah.
And then add some more on top.
Exactly.
Because it's going to drop 2 inches. If you feel it all fluffy, it's going to drop 2 to 3 inches.
Yeah.
And then you can come back and add some more soil on top of that and then plant.
All right.
I think the key with those raised beds is not putting too heavy of a soil in there, because it just turns to hard over time. With all the watering, it just compacts and compacts. I'm not saying don't add some clay in, because clay actually increases the fertility of what you've got. If you've got a soilless mixture, which compost and coconut core and perlite would be essentially soilless.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Add some dirt in there. So maybe 50-50 of that coconut and compost, and then another, some of your yard soil.
Yard, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you can't beat the ground soil, really.
No.
And it's affordable.
Yep,
yeah.
There you go.
It's here.
And she's filling up some big beds, it sounds like.
Yeah,
so.
That takes up
and
a lot.
On the right track.
It takes a lot. I mean, a cubic yard is 3 by 3 by 3, so those are about probably more than a cubic yard.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they're usually 4 by 4 by 3 high. So
right, just one of those
yard
fruit
and
crates.
A quarter, yeah. So take some dirt.
All right. Go for it,
take
Amy.
Some dirt.
All right. 970-527-4868. Yeah. 866 KVNF now. And Wynn, you're doing all kinds of things with your clear water design.
All kinds of stuff.
I know you're
crazy.
Known for your permaculture gardens and edible gardens, and you're working on building a nursery in addition to that.
I am
Tell
working
us
on that.
A little bit about that.
Well, the nursery's been kind of building for about the last decade now, and I just been growing it, pun intended, to be more of a landscape nursery. And I sell a lot of fruit trees. I've got lots of fruit trees this year, about 150 fruit trees for sale. And then I sell a lot of shrubs, different types of edibles mainly, but also a lot of drought tolerant stuff and just general landscape things, spirea and stuff that people like. And then I also propagate a lot of perennials. I'll have about 2,500 perennials this year.
Oh, wow.
I've got about 2,000 right now started in my propagation house. That'll all get potted up into 1 gallons and
wow.
sent out. And some of that's edible and some of it is just purely for the beauty of being there, you know?
Sure, mm-hmm. sure.
So I've got everything from California poppies to I got a lot of bulbs in the fall. So I did a lot of irises and daylilies, and I've got peonies, several different varieties of those. But I also focus a lot on medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. I've got quite a large selection of different types of culinary and medicinal herbs, valerian and marshmallow and St. John's wort and all kinds of mints, and then the culinaries, oregano and thyme and sage, and just various things. I have a small selection of some annuals that I like to put in people's yards, but I also like to sell like Tulsi and jasmine tobacco and regular smoking tobacco. And I also sell like marjoram and things like that are annual crops,
wow.
but people like.
Got it
so,
going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun. Wow. You know, I really love propagating. It's like, for me, that's the, if I could put one thing, it's hard to put one thing at the top when you're a horticulturalist,
yeah.
but I love propagating.
Yeah.
I really do, because it's just such a joy, especially this time of year. You know, mm-hmm. I got into the propagation house in February, and I'm got all my flats out and put my seeds in, and then the green just starts coming
right.
on. And there's something magical about that life force that comes. And some of these seeds on the perennials are just, they're like dust. You have to mix them with sand even just
yeah,
to, you know, be able to, you got to dust them on the surface. They're so tiny. I started like 5 different kinds of sedum from seed this year. And it's like, so you barely even see it. You
right?
get this big envelope and you're yeah. like, where's the seed in this thing? You
yeah.
know, you just sprinkle it on the top and cause they need
awesome.
Light to germinate. And then they're, and then all of a sudden they're coming up and it's just this, now my propagation house is just this little, a sea of green in there.
Yeah, a little.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Little tiny forest.
Yeah. So that's a fun project. And so I do deliveries around the valley. And I have an online store that's at clearwaterdesignsltd.com. And you can go on there and you can actually just buy right online. And we offer planting services too. So you can pay us to come plant it for you as well.
That's the way to go. That makes it easy. And I love perennials. I just love it.
So great.
Yeah, so great.
It's so great.
And you, I'm familiar with a lot of the gardens that you've put in here. And what I love is how you time everything. So something comes up in the spring, and just when that's fading off, something else is coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, just that staging of things all through the season.
Yeah. That's the beautiful part of perennial gardening. And it's kind of like that with the edibles too, you know. And I was just telling Lance, obviously, right before the show here that, you know, we were picking sorrel out of the garden and our salad burnet, which mm-hmm. I know Lance likes a lot. And I'm experimenting with different types of perennial greens that come on early, yeah. a lot of the cooler season things, mm-hmm. because the lettuce, of course, we have got to wait for that. So, yeah. I mean, I have some in my greenhouse, of course, mm-hmm. but because mm-hmm. I like it. So, we're eating the greens out of the greenhouse now. But if you don't have a greenhouse and you want to start eating some salads, you could start your beds and cover them a little bit, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have talked about quite a yeah. bit, but throw some floating row cover, a little remay yeah. over, or even make a little simple cold frame or a little small low-growing hoop house over it.
Right.
And you can get the sorrel and the things to grow faster now. And so you can get the perennial greens out now, and you're eating those salads. And then you later, 6-8 weeks down the road, you'll have your salad greens coming out. Your spinach mm-hmm. in particular is
yeah.
a nice early one. And
the spinach is up.
Yep. I've got some Hong Vit that's coming up too, which mm-hmm. is a radish green.
Oh, okay.
It's grown just for the greens. So that's, and of course your radishes, I mean, those mm-hmm. you could probably put in your plant right now.
Yeah, and you could just eat them for greens.
You can just eat them for mm-hmm. greens, exactly. You know,
Mazuma, the mustards will be just fine right now, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And is that outside that you have the radish growing, or is that?
No, that's in my greenhouse.
It's in your greenhouse.
I planted it in okay. January. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. We're eating yeah. it now, actually.
Nice. But the temperatures are good up. I mean, it looks like it's going to be 40 and stuff in the evenings.
This has been a really sweet spring mm-hmm. thus far, I think.
Yeah. Right.
The ground is still frozen on north sides. There's still a little snowpack, but it's starting to break up.
Mm-hmm.
The ground's real moist everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
My
yeah.
garden's actually too wet to dig in spots still. Mm-hmm. The veggie part we'll be getting into, but the forest garden is it's still pretty shady and it's still even hard
yeah.
ground.
Yeah.
I was trying to dig some perennials out even yesterday, and I couldn't get, it was still frozen up under kind of like the gooseberries and stuff.
Right, right. Or so, big yeah. puddles from where it's melted.
It's all different, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
all different.
It is. And Lance
sure.
and I actually, we're about the same elevation.
Mm-hmm.
We're
Are
pretty,
you?
We're, mm-hmm. we actually have almost the same climate, really, yeah. that we grow in. So
yeah. I was noticing that bed that I prepped for the seed crops, and it goes north-south. In the north end in the shade.
Yeah.
But it's frozen.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's only 6 inches high.
Right.
That's shading it.
Yeah.
But
right.
it's still frozen.
Right.
Yeah.
But the cheatgrass is coming up on the south side everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I mean, all in my, right in front of my house, it's all greening up already. You know?
Yeah.
So
lots
it's amazing the difference in microclimates between a south yeah. side of the house and
mm-hmm.
the north side.
Yeah. Well, I have another bed on the opposite side. Again, that bed's going north south. And the east side, the garlic's an inch tall, and the mm-hmm. west side, it's not, because by the time the west sun is going down, it's cooling.
Right.
You see, so
right.
that is actually right now a week to 2 weeks behind
mm-hmm.
the east side. And then there's another bed that goes west to east, and that whole bed is completely even.
Right.
Coming,
right.
It's perfect.
That makes sense,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So do you recommend doing east to west, or do you think maybe in all directions is good?
It's the only time that I had a question like that years and years ago. And, of course, generally speaking, you want your beds or rows to go north-south.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because when the plants get tall,
right.
in the fall time, they shade anything to the north.
Right.
Okay.
That makes
okay.
sense.
But the rest mm-hmm. of the season, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
It's just only in the fall. So
yeah.
you have to plan that. And only really tall stuff I have is corn.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so.
And that can actually be, you can take advantage of that too.
Mm-hmm.
You can let your corn actually shade a bed to the north if you did run your beds east and west, right?
Sure.
And
yes.
then you could plant your chard or some lettuce maybe mid-season in there or something.
You could
you know,
definitely do that.
Let the corn get up a little bit and then let that soil cool a little.
Right.
Yeah.
It is fun to watch and learn where the sun moves in your yard, and depending on what other foliage you have out there,
yeah.
the canopy piece of your yard,
yeah.
What's being shaded and what's not, and at different times of the year.
It's interesting.
It's just that.
I've been playing with disturbances in my forest garden because I grow veggies, but
mm-hmm.
I'm really a forest gardener.
Okay.
And so
tell us about that.
Well, my forest garden has a large variety of different types of fruit trees and fruiting shrubs, everything from serviceberry to different kinds of currants, to different kinds of gooseberries and Nanking cherries and elderberries, all strategically placed to create little niches in the garden. And then the understory is of culinary and medicinal herbs. And those grow in varying heights. I mean, your lovage will get to be 8 feet tall, and the St. John's wort will stay down to about 18 inches, you know, when it's flowering, all the way to pennyroyal, which is just a little creeping one that just stays really close to the ground. So I've been going in and actually creating, because my forest garden is about 16 years old now. And last year I learned something, because I love pruning trees, second only to propagation, probably, as far as the horticulturist. I love pruning trees. And I've been pruning my trees way out, like just to kind of give them this big, glorious canopy. Well, of course, my fruit set last year was enormous. And you know what happens? The tree prunes itself. You know, the branches are all breaking off. And so I thought, oh, okay, cool. I learned something. And I'd been reading this book, and it was talking about disturbances and how that's a natural part of a forest.
Sure.
Whether it's a wildfire or a tree falls down and takes
out other trees, windstorms,
or just a dead tree, an old tree dies and it falls over and opens up a space in the middle of the forest that was shaded for maybe 50 or 60 years is now a new environment. So I've been playing with cutting my trees back hard. Mm-hmm. And so I cut my apricots back really hard this year because they were so loaded last year that I figured, well, I won't get quite as much fruit, but I'm going to try and keep them tight because they're all semi-dwarf trees, which can get to be tall. Mm-hmm. I mean, a semi-dwarf, it's deceptive to call it that because a semi-dwarf apple tree can be 30 feet tall. You know, it's a big tree. So I'm playing with bringing everything down, and that is actually opening up sunnier patches in my garden that will actually facilitate the growth of different plants. Because I've noticed that some of the things that I planted haven't thrived in the last 5 or 6 years because they're getting shaded too much.
Yeah, big canopy.
So that's the play around with the forest garden. That with an annual vegetable garden, of course, you generally are planting in an environment that's full sun.
Full sun, you know. You might want to explain to them, you got the ground surface level, you got the mid layer, the shrubs, and then you got the fruit trees.
Exactly.
And you're using all these different spaces, not just sunlight, shade, root systems.
Exactly. Exactly. Root systems are different too. So look at a forest, we see how the forest operates, and then we assimilate that into a food-producing forest. And just like Lance said, that actually helps to encourage different type of microbial growth in the soil, because the woody plants tend to have more of a fungal relationship and the herbaceous plants have more of a bacterial relationship. So you're actually encouraging a lot of that. Plus the way the roots grow, a tree will send down deep roots into the ground, which will actually help water to penetrate deeper into the ground because there's a, like a very fine little space between the soil and the root itself that allows the water to kind of go deep into the ground. So you're creating a deeper water lens, which will actually create more drought tolerant plants as well. But you're also dealing with, you know, more netted roots on herbaceous plants a lot of times, unless you're dealing with something like comfrey. Or even lovage, which has these just tremendous honking roots. I mean, my marshmallow root is probably 6 feet deep. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Those plants are amazing, you know. And the crown is probably 2 feet across. So you incorporate all these different things. I plant vines right next to the sumac that are growing outside of my garden. My grapes are growing on that. They just grow up on the sumac.
Sumac.
And the sumac serves as a hedgerow to keep the deer out of the garden. I plant the larger things on the outside and create a pocket that is my garden, which is about a quarter acre. That's surrounded by different types of shrubs that fix nitrogen or ones that produce fruit. Or I also have lilacs because they're just nice. And that's when you plant your potatoes, right? When they're blooming. So they're an indicator. They tell you the soil's warm enough to plant the potatoes. So if we look at all these plants, we can look and see when the soil is warming. You know, they tell us these things.
One of the old sayings was, when the ash trees bud, you plant your gladiolus.
Right.
Yeah, I like those old sayings.
The soil's warm enough.
Aren't mums coming up and indicating something?
I'm not sure.
That's fall.
Oh, that's fall.
Fall's coming. I also pay attention to the cranes. When the cranes come in, I know that as they get here, which will be shortly.
There were some in the cornfields in Delta.
Did you?
Yeah.
When the hordes of them come, I start to realize that, okay, now it's time to start turning my beds and getting ready to plant my cold season crops, actually. Because by April 1st, I'll be putting peas in outside.
Yeah.
I mean, my garlic is starting to just show. Mm-hmm. Actually, the garlic I got from you, Lance, hasn't quite peaked up, but I have a German hardy I did this year.
Oh, okay.
And that one's already about an inch above the soil.
Yeah, good.
I checked the ones I got from you. They got little, you know.
Okay. Was it Inchilium or was it?
It's the soft neck.
Yeah, Inchilium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. And your fall planting of garlic is coming up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you pretty much only plant garlic in the fall.
Oh, well, I have a spring garlic, I'm going to plant this weekend.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you do that from cloves or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that will actually, you don't have to overwinter that, huh?
It's actually a spring planted garlic, and I'll harvest it about a week or so after the regular garlic.
No kidding.
But it stores the best.
Really?
Yeah. It will store. It's the last garlic I eat.
Really?
And then it's just starting to go bad or starting to sprout when I'm harvesting the new garlic.
That's nice. I need to get some of that
for you. Let's see.
are you giving any of that up?
If you want some, I got a bushel.
Okay, cool.
I have a half bushel. I have a half bushel.
Can never have too much garlic.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. It's the silver skins.
Okay.
That you want. If you look, there's different varieties, and the silver skins can be planted as a spring garlic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, good. See, I learned something tonight, too.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's why I listen to this show. You can never know everything about horticulture. It's the beauty of it.
Yeah. There's always something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, 527-4868-866, KVNF now. When just getting back to your edible forest gardens, you're doing a class in conjunction with the Learning Council coming up this summer. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, that'll be in the first weekend of August. We're going to do it on a Saturday, so folks that work can come out. And it's really just an opportunity to come and be in a maturing, productive forest garden. Mm-hmm. And I'll be giving a lecture about integrating plants together and how to do that, and talk a little bit about permaculture because that's definitely my jam, and how to trap water into the soil and hold that there, and how to integrate different types of plants. We talked about nitrogen fixers a little bit, which are plants that take nitrogen out of the air and fix it into the soil, and dynamic accumulators, which are plants that accumulate large amounts of certain types of nutrients in their leaves that we can then use in compost. Or I oftentimes, even with my comfrey, I'll just use it as a mulch. I just throw it right on the ground.
Yeah.
I plant white Dutch clover throughout my garden, and I just mow that down. It's my paths everywhere. So when it's flowering, you just come in and cut that, and it releases nitrogen into the soil. So it's a really nice path material. So that'll be a fun class. And people have the opportunity also to come and buy some stuff at the nursery if they want.
Sure.
They see things that they like. I'm going to be offering a few new things this year. Josta berries is one that I like, and I'm going to be experimenting with some other edibles just to see how they do, like gumi berries, which are related to our Russian olive here.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah, so that's an Eleagnus.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that would be, see if that one works.
Mm-hmm.
And trying a couple different kinds of goji berries. Got a black goji this year we're going to experiment with a little bit. So just trying to expand the horizons a little bit.
Okay.
So, and if people have any more questions on that too, I just wanted to mention that since I can give a little plug on myself, I will be doing the nursery at Farm Runners over in Hotchkiss.
All right.
On Fridays in the springtime.
Okay.
So people can come and pick up plants there.
So you've mentioned nitrogen fixers a couple of times. What kind are you using?
I have a carragana, Siberian pea shrub.
Yeah.
So that's a nice shrub one. I've got licorice growing in my garden, which is a perennial fixer.
The native licorice?
I have, it's Glycoryza glabra, which is like the medicinal, the pencil one. I'm actually going to grow the Uralensis, which is the Chinese licorice. It makes a larger root, but it's the same. So I don't have the native one that's here.
Yeah.
But this is more the medicinal.
Yeah. Just so people know, the native one, it comes up and at maturity or something, it has these little burrs.
Yeah.
On them. And usually where there's a high water table is where they're usually. You don't find them in dry land.
Right.
You know, and so just if you see these.
And they're short too. They're not real tall.
No.
Like my licorice is like 6 feet tall.
Okay.
It's insane. And people said, oh, that won't grow here. I said, oh, I'm going to give it a try. It's like 6 years old. It's amazing.
Oh, good.
And it's spreading. And this year, actually, what I did was I shouldn't give this away because I'm going to sell some of these plants. But we harvested the medicine off of it and took the crowns and stuck them into pots, and they're all growing now.
Oh, so great.
I got a whole new plant, and we harvested the medicine, right?
Wow.
I also grow astragalus. So that's for the leguminous. And then there's a group of nitrogen fixers, as probably a lot of people know or maybe don't, that are not leguminous. And they have a different bacterial relationship with the Frankia bacteria that's in the ground. And those are actinorhizal, they're called. And those are things like the Russian olive that are here, which I don't technically grow in the garden, but they're all over my land.
Yeah.
Buffalo berry, silverberry. Those are buckthorn. Those guys are all nitrogen fixers that are not leguminous. And the nice thing about having both leguminous and non-leguminous nitrogen fixers is that you're encouraging different types of bacteria in the soil. As far as my cover cropping, though, I do a lot of red clover. I've got vetch that's just taken over.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. How about alders?
Alders are another one. I don't have any alders, but I should, actually.
Yeah, there's actually a native alder.
There's a native alder, yep.
Yeah, the red Colorado red alder, I think.
Is that what? I can't remember.
I think it's a reddish-brown or bronze bark.
Yeah, alders are a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Astragalus is another one that I like to grow. That's a medicinal. Chinese medicinal herb for the lungs, and that's another legume. And then, of course, peas.
Wow, what a variety.
I have sweet peas that just grow in the garden. And honestly, I love those because what I learned is the deer love my service berry, but they don't like the sweet peas. So I let the sweet peas grow up over the service berry early in the season, and the deer won't eat the service berry. And then I chop them to the ground, and then I use them as mulch. You know, you just throw the sweet peas right there.
Yeah.
You know, just don't let them set seed. You know.
This is the annual sweet pea?
Or no, the perennial. Oh, you can't get rid of that thing.
No.
I don't know how they got in my garden, but they did. I just don't let them get too crazy. You just don't let them set seed. But, oh, man, I couldn't believe the root on those things.
Yeah,
I was
trying
to dig them out last year. I was like, oh, I'm never getting rid of this. No. I'm just going to live with that one.
Yeah.
But you just keep them chopped back all the time, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you maybe talk some sense into Lulu because she wants to plant her yard with those things.
We're going to have a sit down, Lulu.
We're going for a drive, you know.
Your neighbors will not like you anymore.
No.
Because they're beautiful when they're growing on like barbed wire fences all over the valley, but you know.
And fence lines and stuff.
They're intense.
Oh, man, they are intense. So. Yeah, somebody offered me some seeds once. I've been around a little bit too much.
In the right setting, they're great.
Yeah.
I'm going to try some Cordillera this year, too, which is another leguminous. And I grow that for just for compost building.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to grow my own. I'm trying to create my own fertility on my property exclusively. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm working on it. Yeah, so.
Hey, guys, we're going to take a call from John in Delta before we go. Good evening, John.
Hey, John.
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
What's going on?
I had just something came into my mind real quick. My brother turned me on to these things, pure cordyceps. And do you guys have, it's all kind of off subject right here, but, you know, it's something, it's food and gardening thing, but
do
you have any pure cordyceps? They're mushrooms.
Yeah, they're mushrooms, We only talk about plants. That's a different kingdom altogether, so no, I'm just kidding. are you asking about them as far as cultivating them, or?
No, just general knowledge. I mean, because, you know, you can hear one thing on a label or see one thing on a label and, it's better to get more information, I suppose.
I don't know too much about them. I do know that they're really good for boosting immunity and they're in a lot of mushroom mixtures.
Right.
With reishi and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
As far as growing them here, though, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't.
I know oyster mushrooms do well, and
No, I'm not really much of a grower like that. But.
Yeah, I would do a little research on that, though, and check out Telluride Mushroom Festival.
There you go.
There's a bunch of mushroom geeks up there. Love to talk to you about cordyceps.
When does that happen?
That's in August. Usually over the weekend of whatever the Perseid meteor shower is, which I think is around the 16th. So sometime.
the meteor shower.
Yeah, that's how I relate things. Which meteor shower is happening, okay?
Yeah.
Good. All right. Thanks for the call, John.
Thanks for the call.
All right, thanks. Yeah.
All right. Wind, great to have you here.
Hey, it's great to be here. Are we done already? No, this is an hour-long show, isn't it?
I was learning so much. Great discussion. And again, people can get a hold of you, clearwaterdesignltd.com.
That's correct.
And then Fridays in the spring down at Farm Runners in
Hotchkiss, which
we love, Farm Runners.
Come hang out. Mm-hmm. Talk plants with me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sounds good. And Lance, you'll be back
next week.
Yeah.
And it's Leah coming up with One Woman's Perspective. Thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF. Right.
Thanks for having me tonight, you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate Have it. A good evening.
Turn the key on, you are equipped with taillight neon. You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, the little Owen, though.